us. Start your soca engines and rev it up with Page and Soca Royalty. Starcom Network, in association with Cropover City, presents Soca Ignition. Be in the Soca Kingdom at Bagatelle Great House on Saturday, June 2nd from 9 p.m. for the best of Page and Soca Royalty. Sweet Soca King, RPB.
Oh yes, the water rocks.
Soca Queen, Allison Hine.
The dance on fire.
Multiple Sweet Soca, Party Monarch, and Road March King, Edwin Yearwood. People's Monarch, Sanctuary.
But if I drink too much.
Former Road March Kings, Lead Pipe and Sadis.
Me not leaving less than me, I'm done.
I'm feeling.
Reigning Party Monarch, Lil Rick. And the Prince of Bajan Soca, Piper Sounds. Plus the Trini Soca Kings, Voice, Ravi B, and the Soca King of New York, Lyrical. Tickets are available at $70 general and $300 VIP from Lucky Horseshoe, Bridgetown, Warrens, Worthing, and Bagatelle. CS Pharmacy in Bridgetown, A&B Music Supplies in Sheraton, Smart Store, Lime Grove, Eddie's Supermarket in Sprightstown, Lil Munchkin in Sky Mall, Starcom Network on River Road, and online at www.ticketnation.bb. Soca Ignition, Saturday, June 2nd at the Soca Kingdom Bagatelle Great House. It will be like a movie, so get your tickets now.
Oh, yes. I cheat even the prettiest girls all over me.
This is Down to Brass Tacks. It's now 12:01. Yes, Mr. Marshall.
I really appreciated the call of the last caller. I don't know who he is, but, you know, I have sat on the Public Accounts Committee, and it left a bad taste in the mouth, not just of the members of the committee, but from all accounts in the mouths of the public. The public, and you would certainly recollect that the committee summoned ministers. We summoned specifically the Minister of Housing, Honorable Dennis Kelman. We also summoned the Foreign Minister of Housing, Michael Ashley. We summoned the Minister of Finance to appear before the Public Accounts Committee. The Public Accounts Committee is to review and discuss public accounts. And in the same way that when we summon public servants, a permanent secretary or a clerical officer, they have to attend, it is inconceivable that a government minister could take the view that he has the ability to say to the Public Accounts Committee, I am not coming. Now, that sends exactly the kind of wrong signal.
How do you correct that, though?
Well, you know, Sir David mentioned the fact that in our integrity legislation, it would be important to give the commissioners the powers of the High Court so that they can compel individuals to come. And as you said that, and reflecting on that, that is exactly the challenge that we had in the Public Accounts Committee. There is a chairman, the chairman of a particular board, was summoned no fewer than 18 times, and simply refused to appear. Now, I have to say that we, the Barbados Labour Party, put this new Public Accounts Committee Act on the table, and it is clear that it needs to be strengthened, because if we are to examine the accounts of public expenditure and account to Parliament and report to Parliament for that, and also report to the citizenry, then individuals cannot just decide they're not showing up. Now, if ministers can decide they're not showing up, and chairman of the board can decide they're not showing up, then what is the message that we are sending?
It's a glaring weakness.
It is, and it has to be corrected. Confidence.
And this is a country in which people are now driven by the letter of the law.
Yeah.
As much as possible, if the law does not say, they're not going to do it.
But the statute says that we can summon, but it doesn't say that we can lock up. That's the problem. Not that locking up is every solution, but the commission as it stands needs, in a new dispensation, to be given coercive powers so that when you summon an individual, you can actually force him to appear and give evidence.
And this is in your draft?
It is too vital a matter.
Is this in the draft bill that you all...
No. The draft... Yes, in our draft integrity legislation, we've given the commission, we will give the commissioners those powers, but it was only reflecting that we have a similar defect or a similar weakness in our public accounts legislation, and three of their government ministers just bluntly refuse to show up. But what that means is that they're refusing to acknowledge that they too are accountable. Now, when a government minister, a minister of finance, minister of housing, foreign minister of housing, says, I am not accountable to the people, you know, then what do you have
but
left?
This is a matter which has been raised by people here in the chat, and I've heard it elsewhere. It has to do with making some of this retroactive. If in the change of government, if it does happen, you were in a position where you could establish beyond a shadow of a doubt that people who were in responsible positions in public office were guilty of committing offenses. There are a lot of people in this country who want to see a day come where people who do those things are actually taken to court. And the weakness, if there is one in this system, is that it appears to people as though you can do whatever you want and get away, and a fellow who steals limes down the road
receives the harshest penalty.
It's ridiculous. I would say to you that that is the mood that I pick up among people in the country, and it's being reflected here in some of what people are saying here on this
channel. Those comparisons are spot on. You know, in Belize recently, a new Belizean administration brought a civil action against two former ministers. It's not a frequently used civil claim, but they brought a claim against them for misfeasance in public office. And that misfeasance in public office in Belize cost the taxpayers of Belize a couple of $1 million. And the administration took the bold step of bringing civil claims against those individuals. But what it has done, it has demonstrated to the Belizean electorate that there's a resolve in the government of the day to make people accountable. There are some instances where you can't lock up a fella because when you're talking about the criminal law and people coming forward and saying, well, yes, I did this particular illegal act. But when it comes to civil matters, you're dealing with on a balance of probability, so it's a lower burden of proof, and you are able to go after people. Now, I'm not about to make any pronouncements, but what I will say, is that coming out of the work of the Public Accounts Committee, we feel that the time is right for an administration, and my administration, to take serious steps when it comes to bringing people before the court to make them accountable.
There's another controversial area that I believe needs to be looked at based upon what I'm hearing out there. And it has to do with the scale of fees for lawyers. That there is a scale of fees, but yet we are in a situation where people are uncomfortable with stories about lawyers getting fees that are far in excess of what would have been considered fair and reasonable in the circumstances. And because of our system, where lawyers are at the center of everything, it seems as though these things are protected. There is no desire to address it because one guy or woman will benefit from it today, and tomorrow the next group will come in and do the same thing. Can we get any kind of commitment from these political parties on this?
The issue, David, is not one of the scale of fees. The scale, in fact, sets out the minimum. So I'm going to wear two hats, the lawyer hat and the politician's hat. The scale sets out the minimum that's chargeable. Fine. Here's the problem. There are people who believe that because they support a political party, that they can charge as much as they like, knowing that this inordinately inflated charge is going to be smiled at by their political friends.
But how can we be protected against it?
Well, you know, here's the thing. First of all, I'd like to suggest that the political class needs to understand, and I certainly feel that they understand, that we have to account to the public for what we do. Now, we had an instance, and it was publicized in the press, where a particular lawyer charged a statutory board over $700,000 for doing a particular thing, which, when the same thing was done under the Barbados Labour Party just prior to 2008, the fee charged was only $30,000. So prior to 2008, job X is done for $30,000. Under the Democratic Labour Party administration, the same job is done, but this time the fee is $750,000. It was well publicized, published in The Nation and The Advocate, that the CEO refused to pay, and then it came out that the minister made a call, and eventually the fee was reduced. Now, you know, if that minister was not made accountable, then we have a problem. Anybody who objects to a legal fee, Maria can agree with me on this, I'm sure she will, has the capacity to go to the cost committee and say, John Brown has charged me a fee that is too high. But what statutory board is going to go to the bar and complain?
So the question is, how can we address it, Maria Phillips?
I'd like to say that one way of beginning to address it is to let people know that when you charge these fees, they're going to be made public. Now, remember that, and we have a challenge because the audited accounts of many of our statutory boards are way behind. But in Trinidad recently, after the new administration won, all of the legal fees that were charged by the attorneys to the government agencies in Trinidad were published in the newspaper. Now, transparency is perhaps our best armament against this kind of stuff, because when you shine the light of day on these things, people now have to stand up and say, I cannot justify what I have done. I understand that for the Cahill project, the fee quoted was $5 million. $5 million for the Cahill project. Now, I mean, and there are other instances that we can speak of. Now, because the scale is a minimum, what has to happen is that the agencies that are expected to pay these fees have to do exactly what any private sector business would do. This fee is too high. I'm not prepared to pay. Bill me based on your time, or let's go to the cost committee.
Let's hear from Maria Phillips and then from Grenville Phillips.
Thank you, Mr. Ellis. My question is, does the cost committee function?
Does it?
That's the question. Does the cost committee function?
This area here is one in which, I mean, people can slip through under the radar and get all sorts of a whole set of money. And at the end of the day, it is perfectly within, you know, the system. The system allows for that.
Yes.
So the question is, I mean, is that fair and reasonable to the taxpayers of a country? I mean, I don't care who is involved in it. It remains a valid issue for Barbadians to discuss. Now, Grenville Phillips, how do you, and up to now I ain't hearing nothing other than the norm, because that's like exercising something called moral suasion. It is up to the individual to determine whether they will do it. It is up to the minister, it is up to the board. Barbados can't do no better than that.
Right. That's why, this is Grenville Phillips, Solutions Barbados, that's why we will allow tendering for all these projects. Everything above $25,000, it will be, it must be tendered. Now, in terms of the fee scales, there was a concern quite a few years ago, over a decade ago, about the lawyer's fees. And the Fair Trading Commission investigated, and then they realized that the lawyer's fees were legislated.
The minimum fee
was legislated, and therefore they left them alone and went after the rest of professionals. So they went after the engineers and the architects and the doctors, they went after the land surveyors and the quantity surveyors and all the rest of us, and forced us to abolish minimum fees. And the letters were quite threatening. They will come into your office, they will take away your files, because they forced us to abolish minimum fees. So they gave, we all gave up. I did try
so you
to...
All, the other professionals, therefore, we would have no similar examples.
No, they caused us to abolish it. They forced us to abolish the minimum fees.
The minimum fee. Yes. But because the minimum fee is abolished, that does not restrict you. As a matter of fact, it puts you in a position to charge any fee that you want to charge.
Not in a competitive tendering situation. That's why you competitively tender, and therefore you look at the most reasonable tender that can do the work, and you select those. So it's transparent that way.
So among the professionals, only lawyers would fall into this category of people who have been charging excessively?
Well, people, if they charge excessively, it's usually in a tendering situation. That's why tendering is so important. And that's why giving no-bid contracts is fraught with difficulties. That's where you can get a lot of corruption. Someone could charge anything they want because it's no tendering. You just say, all right, well, here's the job. And you decide, all right, I'll do that. And $10 million job for $20 million.
These jobs that we took, the tendering process applies to the lawyers as well?
The tendering process is not a specific... It's not a tendering process, is not a job specific issue. Anytime that you're going to be engaging services of over a certain value, you go to tender. So it's not a case whether what happens,
including among lawyers.
So far, to be candid, governments do not tender for
when you're party in power. When you're party in power and you're close to the fellas, that's you know, people get work. That's how it works in Barbados.
There are some government agencies that I know go through a process of going to several attorneys
and asking for,
and
quotations.
Ask for quotations.
For some.
For some.
But it isn't mandatory.
It is not mandatory.
Should it be?
I believe so.
And I would support
I am not speaking from a UPP perspective.
So UPP has not examined this?
Not as yet on this scale.
Notwithstanding everything that has been happening in Barbados, UPP has not examined this?
Well, not with as all yet, the lawyers Mr. In there. Ellis. How many lawyers? There are two lawyers, myself and Ms. Eastman.
All the more reason why you should have examined it by now, because it will impact on you.
Well, it's not something that we're refusing to look at. But what I'm saying is that there is a culture among attorneys as well, because as would have been indicated, there is a minimum scale. So it does open up the door for an attorney to charge anything. In Trinidad, there's a maximum scale. They've kept a maximum scale. You can't charge beyond this amount. But we, within our system itself, we've created this system where you can go from, you can charge from the smallest to the highest amount because of the system that exists. So I think it is an issue that needs to be addressed, because I've sat on some boards as well, Ms. Ellis, and I've seen boards that were not in revenue generating have attorneys charges significant amount of money. And I said, how in God's earth can we be paying this an amount to an attorney when this is not even the work that is being done does not justify this type of cost? These are things that have to be addressed.
But it undermines public confidence, I must tell you.
Of course it does. But I'm an attorney. But the fact is that we are now at the point where government has to insist on value for money.
And why
the economy is not in such a state that we can afford to do
that. But why we are talking about...
And whether it's value for money from lawyers, accountants, as long as you're providing a service to any agency of the Crown, we have to insist on...
Why we are talking about that?
Because
a lot of this focus has been on government and stuff like that. Private sector interests matter. Attorneys who mix up their personal and their clients' accounts, there is a body of opinion that it is necessary for attorneys to be audited on an annual basis so that they can continue to practice and give people a greater sense of assurance that they are not being taken advantage of in the way that many people have been over the years. These are some of the issues that are relevant to this discussion that we are having today. Where are your parties on these issues?
I'm not sure that the issue of attorneys and the management of their clients' accounts is directly related to the issue of corruption in government. Because
We said corruption in Barbados. Mm-hmm. This discussion is about corruption in Barbados. It isn't about corruption in government alone.
Well, I would suggest to you that if there's an issue of attorneys who are not properly managing their client account, that is not an issue of corruption, but one of dishonesty and breach of trust.
Well, you can determine whether the breach of trust and dishonesty.
But
the point to me is that maybe we are representing the interests of the people of this country, all right? And to identify what we see as the range of issues that people want action on. People feel unfaired by the private sector in different ways. And we said in this discussion, it is not about government alone. It is also about what happens out there among the professionals and stuff like that. So, Solutions Barbados, have you all looked at this?
Yeah, well, we looked at the entire gamut of corruption in terms of all of the lawyers taking persons' monies. So if you're taking your client's money, putting it in your bank account, then yes, you should be audited before you can practice the following year.
David, let's just be clear.
Yeah. Because of the significant amount, I'm saying that is corruption because that does not fall within my concept. Yeah, because I'm barely getting the time to speak here.
Yeah.
Taking up all the time and then stopping me.
I have the Attorney General still on the line. He came back because he lost his line earlier. Yeah.
If you're taking clients' monies and putting them in your accounts, then you should be audited and provide evidence of that to get your certificate to practice the next year.
So you support that view?
I support that view.
Okay.
Because of the amount of complaints that we've been having, and it seems that when things go into the Bar Association, things aren't really being done.
Attorney General Brathwaite, are you there? Hello? It doesn't seem so. We have another call in the meantime. It's now 12:21. We tried to get back the Attorney General, and I think Crystal Howell also wants to get back in as well.
But to be clear, though, this is not all lawyers. This is the lawyers who receive funds and put them in their accounts.
But it's true, but it's not all politicians either. Contrary to what has been said earlier, the concern about corruption in Barbados, to me, I don't think it's fair to for people on the ground to project it as though all politicians are. But we have a climate and an environment which can create an environment that casts aspersions on all because of the behavior of some. Okay?
So they should be under greater scrutiny.
If I could just add here, generally, most firms or attorneys will have some level of auditing that goes on in their accounts. But I want to say that the significant thing that I think we need to look at is from a money laundering perspective, because an attorney could be asked to hold funds on a client's account that comes from illegal sources. And I think from that perspective is something that, if you want to say it could contribute to corruption, is something that we will possibly have to look at in the future. But at the same time, clients' funds is usually separate from the other.
They're supposed to be. But as we said earlier, they're not always kept in that way. And it is trying to look for mechanisms to better protect the public's interests in that regard. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Let's take another call before we go to the news. Hello.
Good afternoon, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, good afternoon.
And to your guests.
Yes, ma'am.
Integrity is such a loose term, and it can sometimes be seemingly meaningless.
You don't have a lot of time, so get straight to your question.
Yeah. Now, I want Mr. Attorney General, he said that no bond can fault him for his integrity. But apart from him, because you've got a ministry, you've got people working under you who sometimes prohibit the laws, the wheels of justice from going on.
So your point is?
Is that integrity too?
Okay. Let's take another call. Hello, Down to Brass Tacks.
Hello? You on the air?
The last thing associated with politicians comes about from a lot of...
Maybe you didn't get you from the beginning.
I say a lot of this thing about corruption with politicians comes about through spite and envy. And it has a lot to do with how the Barbados Labour Party has elevated it to a state of almost Fort Lauder. Because by Mr. Dale Marshall's own admission, he said a lot of the corruption in Barbados operates at the level where you're asking for a license or a permit or something like that. But you can't say a politician is involved in that kind of activity. When a man wants a permit or a license, he doesn't go to a politician. A politician does not work at the town country planning or at the transport authority or at the MTW.
I'm not sure what he's saying.
He's talking about bureaucratic, you know, kind of bureaucratic corruption. And he's saying, okay, that politicians are not involved at that micro level, but politicians are responsible for creating governance systems, huh? And ensuring that there is a culture that permeates through the public service, where public servants themselves feel that they can also be held accountable. So I don't know how we can separate what happens at the micro level with the, you know, the everyday person who, you know, may take a bribe for a license or something like that from the political system itself. I think that we have to look at the entire system and ensure that politicians are held accountable. And when we come down to it, ministers are held accountable for their ministries and the people who operate within that particular
and
context.
And by extension, permanent secretaries.
Permanent secretaries as well. And I think that is it.
But you know what I find fascinating about this call? Because this is a voice that I am becoming quite familiar with. This call forgets the point which was made earlier, that in previous election campaigns, the very Democratic Labour Party that is now under scrutiny has been in the vanguard of telling Barbadians exactly what he's complaining about, that there was corruption and there was a necessity to root it out. And if you believe that it has been elevated to too high a status now, you also have to look at the role that politicians across the board, including Democratic Labour Party politicians, have played in bringing it to this position. You want to give them a free pass on this one.
Barbados Labour Party has not been involved for 10
years. No, Mr. Ellis, I want to make this quite a point. Listen to me. There is nothing that happens within the apparatus that is government that is illegal or could be termed corruption that nothing is on the statute books to stem it or curtail it. You cannot legislate people's behaviors. And that is the problem. If the politicians put the checks and balances in place to ensure that corruption does not exist, but at the lower level where the operatives see this as not a hindrance to them, right, then
we got to go to the news. I would like you to come back and talk with us, but I'll just leave you with this particular comment. A lot of this discussion about corruption in Barbados revolves around the need to modify the way that we do business, that the structures, the 1929 legislation is considered by many people to be inadequate. And that flies in the face of what you are saying. You are saying to me, we have everything in place to correct it, but the only problem is the people themselves. So we'll come back after the news, the latest at 12:30, and hear more from you and others as we continue this special focus on corruption in Barbados, the People's Parliament edition.
VOB 92.9 FM wants you to enjoy the sweet life for 1 year. 1 year. One lucky VOB listener will win a year of easy living. Groceries, utility bills, landline and mobile telephone services, fuel, internet services, education opportunities, health and fitness services, and many more. Here's how to enter. Spend $40 or more in fuel at any SO service station. $25 or more at any branch of KFC. $25 or more at the Lorry Dash Craft Shop. $50 or more at Accents and Decor. Or $50 or over at LED Illuminations. Every time, write your name and contact information on the back of the receipt or entry form and drop it in the box provided at any of our participating sponsors. Sweet life in VOB country. 1 year of easy living for one lucky VOB listener.
Barbados! Start your soca engines and rev it up with Bajan Soca Royalty. Starcom Network, in association with Cropover City, presents Soca Ignition. Be in the Soca Kingdom at Bagatelle Great House on Saturday, June 2nd from 9 p.m. for the best of Bajan Soca Royalty. Sweet Soca King, RPB.
Oh yes, the water up.
Soca Queen, Allison Hines. Multiple Sweet Soca, Party Monarch, and Road March King, Edwin Yearwood. People's Monarch, Sanctuary.
But if I drink too much.
Former Road March Kings, Lead Pipe and Sadis.
In a living lesson, I'm done. I'm feeling.
Reigning Party Monarch, Lil Rick.
I got the energy.
And the Prince of Bajan Soca, Piper Sounds. Plus the Trini Soca Kings, Voice, Ravi B, and the Soca King of New York, Lyrical. Tickets are available at $70 general and $300 VIP from Lucky Horseshoe, Bridgetown, Warrens, Worthing, and Bagatelle. CS Pharmacy in Bridgetown, A&B Music Supplies in Sheraton, Smart Store Lime Grove, Eddie's Supermarket in Spritestown, Lil Munchkin in Sky Mall, Starcom Network on River Road, and online at www.ticketnation.com. Soca Ignition, Saturday, June 2nd at the Soca Kingdom Bagatelle Great House.
It will be like a movie,
so get your tickets now.
Oh, yeah. I cheat even the prettiest girls all over me.
Down to brass tacks, we have representatives of the political parties with us here today, and also some representatives from Integrity Group Barbados, one on the line, one in the studio. Crystal Howell is on the line. Chantal Monroe Knight is in the studio. Representing the Barbados Labour Party, we have Dale Marshall from the UPP. We have Maria Phillips, and Grenville Phillips is from Solutions Barbados. On the telephone, we also have Attorney General Dale Marshall. Sorry, again.
Again.
Adriel Brathwaite. My apologies. Adriel Brathwaite, representing the Democratic Labour Party. I hope that is not seen as anything that I intend to let happen or encourage. But anyhow, be that as it may. You know, I must say that of all the things we discussed today, the one area that has left me feeling a little bit unanswered or properly answered has been this whole question which we raised about how we deal with the fees for attorneys when they are dealing with government's work and that sort of thing. Now, I didn't get a comment from the Attorney General, Adriel Brathwaite. Are you there, Mr. Brathwaite? Well, who do you have on the line there then? We have Crystal Howell.
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, tell me. Have you heard the discussion on that aspect of it? What are your thoughts? As a matter of fact, I must tell you that I don't even believe that I've heard a lot of discussion about this from Integrity Group Barbados. This, to me, is one of those areas that is glaring in this country, but yet we talk about everything else under the sun except that. Why?
I think persons, it was mentioned earlier, where there's a culture where Barbadians feel as though there's certain information that should be maintained as private or confidential. The unfortunate thing is that the entire world seems to disagree. We are one of two countries that have not signed on to the updates in the integrity legislation. And even in listening to the conversation, there seems to be a lot of disagreement about what corruption is, what we should be sharing with the public, and how we should be moving forward. We are squabbling over whether something is corruption or wrongdoing, and whether we are doing as badly as another country, when the focus of the conversation should be how we can do better, how we can be more transparent, and how we can assure persons that areas such as the fees with related to lawyers, persons can feel comfortable or confident in this system. So instead of trying to justify what the current practice is, I think we should be working together to find out how we can make it better, even if you think it is okay.
And what are some of the areas you believe we need to put that effort into?
The role of the auditors should come forward even more so. If you have an independent person who can say, okay, we have reviewed the fees and we know that the fees are definitively kept separate from the other fees that lawyers would have, persons would feel a little bit more comfortable. And then if you have incidents where we would have had one lawyer that would have been brought to trial where he would have used client's funds, and we get to follow through and see that some kind of justice is brought to the fore where those kind of cases are concerned. And we also show that it's not prevalent, because I think that's one of the areas that the Executive Secretary of the Bar Association mentioned, that when you highlight these cases, it gives the impression that it is the entire body of lawyers that are engaged in this behavior. But we do not have statistics, and unfortunately, the perception is going to be there when you hear these cases that if one lawyer was able to get away with this, it could be done by other lawyers and just covered up better. So we need to see more transparency. We need to have an idea of the number of cases where this is happening and the follow through to make sure that it does not happen again. Because if he was able to do it, what is to say that there are other lawyers who aren't doing it but are better at covering up what they've done?
Any comment?
David, I'm really not so sure the context within which a discussion of corruption draws into a discussion on legal fees. But be that as it may, professional fees, whether you are a lawyer, a doctor, or a candlestick maker, should let us agree that insofar as governance and government-related work is concerned, there should be transparency in the selection, and there should be transparency in the awarding of legal work.
You have answered your own question.
Legal? No. But you know, you're talking now about. Remember that.
That is the context in which it is being discussed.
And mm-hmm. therefore, I'm happy to discuss it within that context, okay? Right. But only within that context, because a legal brief is a contract between the client and the lawyer, and those parties determine what legal fee will apply.
Right.
If the client thinks the lawyer has overcharged, then there's a mechanism to deal with that.
Right.
What I would prefer to talk about is really the issue of how government farms out its service contracts, whether those service contracts are for cleaning a building or for providing legal services to a statutory board. And the same rule should apply regardless to whether it is a legal service or a chemical toilet service or a service as an engineer. Now, I don't know if it is that engineers' fees are so low that nobody quarrels about them, or maybe nobody feels that engineers are the scum of the earth, so they don't become easy targets. I'd like to focus on the principle. Government procurement is procurement whether it is for a service
or a good.
And as long as government procurement is involved, then the same rules, I believe, should apply.
Across the board.
So it is not a lawyer issue or an accountant issue or an engineering issue. And if we can agree that that is the principle,
then that would address the concern.
Then I think that addresses the concern, because I too am appalled when I hear the kinds of fees that lawyers have charged government institutions, and they expect to get away with it because the minister is their friend. And I really would like Adriel Bradford to come back on the phone.
Yes, I just want to endorse what Dale is saying, because it is a contract, and it's a contract of for services. And so therefore, it should be subject to the same procurement process. If it is that you have to send out for tenders, you're sending out to various attorneys to see what their the reason likelihood of their fees will be in a matter. I think that would allow for transparency in the process.
But the issue then is enforcement of it.
Yes.
Because, mm-hmm. you know, it's all well and good to say that that's what the law says, mm-hmm. but then you know what happens here. Mm-hmm. How do you...
I apologize. Me and my law firm have bid for international consultancies. And some we're successful, some we're not successful. Mm-hmm. But the document is almost always, I'm sure you will have seen many of them, they're long documents, they're procurement rules. Mm-hmm. You have to say what rate each lawyer is going to charge by the hour. Mm-hmm. You have to say, this is what I'm going to do, this and these are the costs. And you break it down. Mm-hmm. And I have no discomfort bidding for projects of that kind. And as I said, sometimes you're successful, sometimes you're not. But you know what the rules are going in. Mm-hmm. And I can see no difficulty with establishing a proper procurement regime for the procurement of services in Barbados.
The procurement regime is one thing. I think, as David was saying, is one issue is the issue of the transparency, mm-hmm. of the regime and the strength of it, but also then the enforcement. Because we can talk about shedding the light and publicizing, you know, the wrongdoing. But I think what Barbadians are more interested in, when we've shed the light and wrongdoing has been found, what happens thereafter? And we need to really address the concerns of Barbadians that in many instances, people can get away with things, even when the light has been shed. And that the system, therefore, needs to move one step further and to ensure that there are proper systems that people can actually be held accountable when that wrongdoing is highlighted. So I think the two things have to go together. Yes, the transparency, but what happens after as well is going to be important.
Granville Phillips?
Yeah, so it's a lot of the enforcement is a management issue, and that's why we come back to the ISO 9001 quality management system, like requiring lawyers who have persons' money to be audited every year. That's a management issue, and that can be enforced that way. But I want to get back to this tendering issue, because it's extremely important. When you have bad tendering and you are giving out projects to friends and that sort of thing, you're picking winners, but you're also picking losers. And when you're picking losers, you are harming very good competitive companies. With engineering, and even I'm sure with some lawyer companies as well, you can only tender if you have done a similar project in a certain period of time. Like some of our projects, they used to be 10 years. If you've done a hospital in the last 10 years, you can tender on other hospitals. Then it came down to about 5 years, as in some of them are 3 years. So you have to be able to show that you have done a similar project in the last, say, 5 years, so that you can qualify to tender. And when you have administration giving out work for 10 years, then they cause great harm to competitive companies. And that's unfortunate collateral damage.
Okay.
You know, I listen, these ideas sound good. I like to think that I live in the real world. When I became a lawyer, up until the day I became a lawyer, I had not done anything that I was doing from day one. And yes, it's wonderful to say that, you know, you must have done this particular work for X years or Y years. Barbados is a small society, Granville, and there was a time when you got a particular brief, and it was the first time that you got it. If I got a case on anti-dumping tomorrow, it might be my first anti-dumping case. But there's a lawyer we know who is now dead who always said, you don't need to know the law, you need to know where to find it.
You misunderstood.
And there are a lot of professionals in Barbados who will not be able to say that I have this particular skill set under my belt. But you know what? As a parliamentarian, to be a politician, I believe that I have a responsibility to give them an opportunity to do it. So I have to say, I can't buy. I understand what you're saying, but unless the government of Barbados is asking somebody to build a rocket ship or a nuclear facility, we have to accept that there are some realities that we face.
Don't rule out Barbadians because they may not have had this experience or the other. You have completely misunderstood what I said. Entirely.
And I'm sure
what
that's
I'm saying,
fault.
Right, so what I said was, if you're tendering for a bridge project, and it's funded by, the Caribbean Development Bank or the Inter-American Development Bank, they require you to show that you have done a similar project in the last 5 years to qualify to tender. That's what I'm saying.
It's funded by the Ministry of Public Works.
Well, you can decide what qualification criteria you wish. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to say that you have to specify anything exclusionary, but I'm just saying that that's why it harms competitive companies. Because if you give out no tendering projects, then those who can tender can't put it on their CV, therefore, to tender for another project.
Okay, let's take another call. Hello. Welcome to the program. You on the air?
Good day. I just want to make a brief point.
Sure.
As it relates to, Unemployment Service Act, there is,
Your line is breaking up a bit. What exactly are you talking about again?
I'm talking about files in the public service, security of files, how it relates to public officers, and you need to secure them.
Yeah.
Many times you get reports, and I've read reports about files going missing, files being mutilated or can't be found, and I think that's very serious because files are needed to officers to be promoted, and you cannot have false and misleading information on officers' files, and those files shouldn't just vanish. If there's an investigation going on, those files should be persons that come into who are the custodians for those files should be made accountable. And there's a charge of professional misconduct of a serious nature, which marks an officer's dismissal if false and misleading information is placed on the file. These things we look at, and I'm very concerned many times about the treatment of files within the public service as general. So I want to know today what the political parties would do in terms of securing the confidentiality and the trust of files that they've made authentic and credible. Thank you.
David, if I can weigh in on this issue, and it really is important, because I imagine there are probably some listeners who say, what I got to do with corruption and transparency? But the whole system has to have an integrity. And if files are going to go missing, then transparency legislation is of no use. Because when you request if you request information under the Freedom of Information Act and the file is not there, then you can't get it. The Public Accounts Committee requested a number of government files in relation to the administration, our work on national housing. And we were informed that the files could not be found. We requested them not because we were engaged in a scattershot approach. We requested those files because we felt that they would contain information vital to our work. The files couldn't be found. We spent a lot of time looking at this issue. And the reality is that we need to protect the integrity of all government information. Unfortunately, we have relied too much in the past on paper files. I don't know if you've ever seen any. Every officer that goes there is minuted, the file gets thick, then they open another file and another file, and they all fit into a filing cabinet, and they're expected to form the historical record of Barbados for the next 300 years. Technologically, we have to go past this, and we have the capacity to do it now in a way that's efficient. But we cannot accept a state of affairs where files can be allowed to go missing and nobody knows where they are, because